morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Friday, December 30th, 2005. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Jim Thompson.
Coming up on the KBOO Morning News, a federal judge orders Columbia and Snake River dams to keep spilling water for salmon. The Bush administration stands in opposition to an international treaty banning landmines. And Iraq's largest oil refinery has been shut down following death threats to tank drivers. Today's Portland area weather, rain, highs around 50, lows around 45.
And good morning. Portland General Electric has hired a Maryland company to implode the 500-foot-high cooling tower at the decommissioned Trojan Nuclear Power Plant. The plant is near Rainier, about 40 miles from Portland. A PGE spokesman says that Controlled Demolition Incorporated will bring down the tower. They'll do so through carefully placed explosives, probably around May. The Portland utility operated Trojan from 1976 to 1993. It was the only nuclear plant ever built in Oregon. It closed some 20 years ahead of schedule after a cracked steam tube released radioactive gas in 1992. PGE says the demolition is part of a larger project to restore the area where the plant is located to a more natural state. Controlled Demolition, which operates worldwide, has brought down several major structures, including the King Dome in Seattle.
The number of Oregonians who qualify for food stamps, welfare, and free medical care keeps growing, even with the state well into an economic recovery. This is caused state forecasters to vastly underestimate how many people would qualify for government help in the current 2005-2007 budget. The missed estimate has contributed heavily to a $172 million shortfall. The State Department of Human Services revealed the gap this week. State leaders will start trying to fix the problem next month. Legislative leaders have raised the possibility of a special session, but a spokesman for Governor Kulongoski said that a special session is premature. So is slashing services to plug the hole. Lawmakers hope to plug the gap without cutting services to the poor, but they have yet to figure out a way to do that.
A federal judge ordered the federal government to continue spilling extra water over some of the dams on the Snake and Columbia rivers in spring and summer to help young salmon migrate to the ocean. The order from U.S. District Judge James Redden comes as a result of his ruling earlier this year that the Bush administration's latest plan for operating the dams jeopardized the survival of the endangered fish. NOAA Fisheries had argued that putting the young fish in barges and tank trucks to get them around the dams was better for the fish and allowed the dams to avoid the loss of millions of dollars in electricity revenues, but the judge rejected that idea. Alan Moore of Trout Unlimited, one of the plaintiffs in the case, says he is happy to hear that the judge agrees with conservation groups and fishermen that the river is the best place for fish.
A year and a half after a Yakima tribal leader filed a lawsuit against the Bonneville Power Administration over the transmission lines running through his Columbia River Gorge property, Leo Alec is still waiting for a new lease and compensation. The lease on the transmission lines running through his property expired in May of 2003. Alec is not alone in his issues with the BPA. 22 other tribal landowners along the Columbia River also have power lines running through their properties without lease agreements. Alec has been leading the fight to get landowners worthwhile lease agreements, but negotiations are going nowhere. Based on figures the BPA used to pay Umatilla tribal owners, leases should total out at about $4 million for all Yakima property owners involved. But the BPA is offering only about $500,000 to the tribal property owners. Lawyers for Alec are preparing to appeal the court decision, and Alec is waiting to see if a federal judge will act on his claim, seeking damages from the time the leases had expired.
Warren Rudy Clements, the longtime public face of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, died of complications from diabetes Wednesday night. He was 69. Clements had held several high-ranking jobs with the tribe, most recently overseeing tribe relations and heading casino and gambling boards. For the past decade, he pushed for the Warm Springs to get state approval for a bitterly contested off-reservation casino in the Columbia River Gorge. Michael Mason, a lobbyist for the tribe, described Clements as a gentleman with a wonderful sense of humor who never seemed to tire of sharing his culture or explaining why the tribe wanted to build a casino in its ancestral land, the environmentally protected gorge.
The first on-site measurement of snowpack on Mount Hood has come in below average. The manual measurement by Leah and Bill Oberman of the National Resources Conservation Service showed a snowpack at 78% of average at the test site. December is an important month for snowfall. About 40% of the snow water in a season falls by January 1st. The snowpack is constantly monitored at sites around the West. The water content and snow depth are important clues for scientists, farmers, and winter sports fans as they consider the likelihood of springtime drought and powdery runs. The Mount Hood test site showed the lowest measured snowpack in Oregon. Conservation Service measures several sites around Mount Hood, which together came in at 82% of the average.
Southern California Edison says it will close an aging power plant near Laughlin, Nevada. The Mojave Generating Station was at the center of a dispute a few years ago. Environmentalists had complained the coal-fired power plant repeatedly violated the Clean Air Act by emitting high amounts of fine particles and contributing to a haze at the Grand Canyon. Under a 1999 federal consent decree won by the environmental groups, the plant was required to upgrade its pollution controls or close by this Sunday. The plant has provided Southern California Edison with 7% of its electricity, but the company says its 13 million customers would not be immediately affected because of other power sources. The plant is the only customer of the nearby Black Mesa mine, which provides about 160 jobs to members of the Navajo Nation. The mine will likely be forced to close.
Two former employees of socially responsible garment maker American Apparel have dropped lawsuits alleging the company's CEO created a sexually hostile work environment. FSRN's Leilani Albano reports from Los Angeles.
Heather Pithy and Rebecca Brinegar jointly filed an employee harassment and wrongful termination lawsuit against store founder Dove Charney, but that lawsuit was dropped. Gloria Allred, who served as a lawyer for the two plaintiffs, declined to comment on details of the dismissal. This is not the first time Charney has faced criminal charges for alleged sexual misconduct in the workplace. This year, a similar case filed by former sales manager Mary Nelson is pending, and a third case brought by former district manager Julie Carosi in Chicago was dropped earlier this year. According to the City News Service, both Pithy and Brinegar allege they were forced to quit earlier this year because of sexual harassment on the job. Pithy claims Charney made it clear that her job was to find him young, attractive women to engage in sex. In the lawsuit, Pithy also claimed Charney cursed at her using sexually explicit language during a work-related event in Las Vegas. At the same time, Brinegar, who was a trade show coordinator with American Apparel, says that Charney gestured to his crotch and exposed himself to her. According to the suit filed by Nelson in Los Angeles, other allegations against Charney include conducting business meetings in his underwear and parading in a penis and ball cover during meetings, and referring to women using sexual expletives. Mark Saylor is a public relations spokesman with Citric & Company, representing Dove Charney. Saylor declined to be recorded. Although he denies all allegations of improper behavior, Saylor explained during an interview that the American Apparel head may have appeared only in his underwear during photo shoots, but did not do so during work meetings. The allegations of sexual misconduct by its CEO runs counter to American Apparel's progressive image as a sweatshop-free clothing line. The 35-year-old mogul, who started American Apparel in 1977 and has reaped $250 million in profits this year, champions his clothing company for paying workers generously and giving them benefits. In addition to offering full health care, Saylor says the store provides its 3,000 garment workers above-average pay of $12 or more. Trina Taku is spokeswoman for Musicians Against Sweatshops, which tracks the American Apparel allegations.
Various women have said that, you know, while they really agree with the mission of the company, they've just had a really hard time gaining respect at their workplace.
She says that despite the high pay and benefits, oppressive conditions among female workers remain if they must endure sexual improprieties from their employers. She also says that Charney takes an aggressive stance against unionizing efforts, a position she thinks cannot coincide within a sweatshop-free setting.
Charges filed through the National Labor Relations Board have been filed against American Apparel in the summer of 2003. Workers were trying to form a union, and American Apparel definitely did some very, explicit union busting, having anti-union rallies on work company time. There's also been allegations that Dove was telling workers that the factory would close down, right? Lots of intimidation.
For FSRN, this is Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
A 16-year-old from Florida who traveled to Iraq on his own without telling his parents has left the country and is on his way home. Faris Hassan has been under the care of the U.S. Embassy after being on his own in Iraq for several days. Consul General Richard Herman said, quote, "I am very pleased to announce that the young American citizen who has been in Iraq the past few days has now safely departed Baghdad, and this young American is on his way back home to his family in the United States." Herman reiterated warnings by the State Department and Embassy against traveling to Iraq and said Americans in Iraq should register their presence. Hassan is a student at Pinecrest School, was introduced to immersion journalism, a technique in which a writer lives the life of his subject in order to better understand it. Hassan, whose parents were born in Iraq but have lived in the United States for about 35 years, hung out at a local mosque. The teen, who says he has no religious affiliation, added that he even spent an entire night until 6 a.m. talking politics with a group of Muslim men, a level of immersion his teacher characterized as dangerous and irresponsible.
A newfound flaw in Microsoft's Windows operating system is being used by hackers to install malicious code on personal computers. Users can infect their computers by visiting certain websites that are able to exploit some Windows-based applications. Internet security company Panda Software said the discovery is one of the most serious vulnerabilities recently detected. The flaw in the world's most popular software leaves PCs open to adware and spyware, as well as Trojans, which can hide damaging programs. Internet Explorer, Outlook, and the Windows Picture and Fax Viewer are used to insert the potentially harmful code. Microsoft has been working to improve the security of Windows, which has come under attack from more than 17,000 computer viruses and worms.
Today, Washington is standing in opposition to an international treaty that bans the use and production of anti-personnel landmines, and the Bush administration intends to make new ones, too. In 1994, the United States was the first nation to call for the elimination of landmines that killed and maimed hundreds of thousands of innocent people around the world. America's latest contribution to the war tech is Spider. Spider is an advanced man-in-the-loop area denial munition. It will protect the warfighter by laying down either a lethal or non-lethal field of fire, yet puts complete command and control in the hands of the soldier. Spider offers remotely controlled force protection while enhancing the operational and tactical flexibility of forces in the field. Spider is being developed by ATK with its joint venture partner, Textron. In reversal of its earlier policy, the U.S. is reportedly planning to produce a new generation of landmines called Spider by March 2007, a move that has alarmed civil society groups campaigning for a global ban on the use and production of landmines for years. This from OneWorld.net.
U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has announced a new international exchange program for journalists named for the famed broadcaster Edward R. Murrow, emphasizing the democratic principles that guided Murrow's practice of his craft, integrity and ethics and courage and social responsibility. Rice said, "We all know the bedrock pillar of a free society is a free press and that it is crucial for the foundation of any democracy." The new initiative, the Edward R. Murrow Journalism Program, is a partnership of the State Department's Bureau of Educational Cultural Affairs, the nonpartisan Aspen Institute, and the journalism schools of six U.S. universities. Announcement of the new program was strangely juxtaposed with the furor surrounding recent disclosures that the Pentagon hired a public relations firm called the Lincoln Group to pay Iraqi journalists to publish articles written by the U.S. military that put a positive spin on developments in Iraq. The published articles do not identify U.S. military as the source. This from Interpress News Service.
Opponents of a Colorado ballot proposal that would bar undocumented immigrants from receiving government services say the proposal could end up costing taxpayers. Officials of the Denver-based think tank called the Bell Policy Center today asked voters to turn it down. But Evergreen resident Bill Heron says his group, Defend Colorado Now, plans to begin gathering voter signature next month to get it on the 2006 ballot. The proposed constitutional amendment would allow undocumented immigrants to receive only those government services that are required by federal law or needed in an emergency. The Bell Policy Center contends that taking services away from undocumented immigrants would cause unneeded suffering without improving national security.
2005 was the warmest year in modern times. New research is confirming scientists' worst fears, and most experts agree that urgent and innovative international action on climate change is needed. Several climate research studies released in December show that the impacts of climate change are coming faster than predicted. This suggests that the worst-case disaster scenarios may be the most likely unless there is concerted global action to reduce emissions. Warmer temperatures are thawing the top 3 meters of permafrost beneath the western Siberian peatlands, creating giant lakes and swelling rivers. Permafrost is also melting in Alaska and northern Canada. A new study predicts that over half of the northern hemisphere's permafrost could thaw by 2050. The melting of millions of square kilometers of permafrost will unleash billions of tons of methane, the U.S. National Center for Atmospheric Research reported in the December 7th issue of Geophysical Research Letters. Methane is a greenhouse gas that is 20 times more potent than carbon dioxide and will dramatically accelerate global warming. A major permafrost meltdown will have a major impact on climate. The first direct measures of Greenland's massive ice sheets released in December found that they'd lost 162 cubic kilometers of ice between 2002 and 2005. This is higher than all previous estimates and is contributing to rising sea levels. Scientists from the U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration reported that Greenland alone has enough ice to raise global sea levels 3 meters. Earlier in the year, European scientists reported that analysis of ice cores from Antarctica show that today's level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is 27% higher than any previous peak, looking back 650,000 years. In a bizarre twist, air pollution has so far cushioned the full impact of all that additional carbon dioxide. This, according to Interpress News Service.
The lawyer of a man who claims he was taken to Syria by the CIA and tortured said yesterday that there were examples of similar cases. His remarks sparked renewed demands for a full inquiry into extraordinary rendition in the United Kingdom. Lauren Walden, the human rights lawyer representing Mayor Arar, says it was ridiculous for the U.S. ambassador to London, Robert Tuttle, to deny any renditions by the U.S. of terrorist suspects to Syria had taken place. Tuttle denied there was evidence of a rendition to Syria, but the U.S. embassy in London later issued a clarification admitting there were reports of one case involving Arar. The lawyer said other suspects had also been shipped for torture by the CIA to Syria. There was further embarrassment for the U.S. when a former British ambassador to Damascus, Henry Hogger, appeared to confirm that Syria was being used by the CIA. In Britain, a spokesman for the Common All-Party Group on Rendition said, "The momentum for a full inquiry is now becoming unstoppable. There are inquiries in European countries, including Switzerland, Italy, Germany, and a public inquiry in Canada. Why should Britain be the odd one out?" This according to The Independent.
Yesterday, we reported that the NSA official website was using cookies improperly. And today, we report that whitehouse.gov, the official website of the White House, is doing the same. An outside contractor has been using internet tracking technologies that may be prohibited to analyze usage and traffic patterns at the White House website. The White House's internet director claims he did not know about it and is investigating, but he thinks it may be consistent with policy. The White House's website uses what is known as a web bug to anonymously keep track of who's visiting and when. A web bug is a small graphic image that is pulled from a server maintained by the contractor, Web Trends Incorporated, and lets the traffic analytic company know that another person has visited a specific page on the site. Web Trends headquarters are here in Portland, Oregon. Web bugs themselves are not prohibited, but when these bugs are linked to a data file known as a cookie so that a site can tell whether the same person has visited it again. In a statement, Web Trends said the analysis performed at the White House site is typical among organizations for improving their user experience.
Family members of Korean farmers detained during this month's protest against the World Trade Organization arrived in Hong Kong to be present during a court hearing. The Archbishop of Hong Kong has also publicly given his support to the protesters while characterizing the actions of the Hong Kong police as inappropriate. Dante Toza files this report.
Hong Kong police arrested nearly 1,000 people during protests against the World Trade Organization ministerial meeting earlier this month. The majority were released within days without charge. 14 protesters, mostly Korean farmers, are facing legal action. They have been charged with unlawful assembly, which carries a penalty of 5 years in prison. The Archbishop of Hong Kong, Joseph Zen, in addition to publicly supporting the Korean farmers who protested against the WTO, also gave surety to the detainees, a legal support guarantee that was required in order to secure the temporary release. The 14 accused are due to appear in court tomorrow. Their legal team is asking that the charges to be dropped so the defendants can return to their homes. This is Dante Toza for Free Speech Radio News in Hong Kong.
Iraq's largest oil refinery has been shut down following death threats to tanker drivers, jeopardizing supplies of electricity across northern Iraq. The threats followed a steep rise in the price of petrol earlier this month, ordered by the government. The oil ministry said the shutdown at Baji was costing them $20 million a day. The ministry said it hoped the refinery, which has been out of action since the weekend, would be back up and running within days. Oil distribution has been further disrupted by storms that have prevented exports being shipped from the Basra terminal in the south. Although billions of dollars have been spent on infrastructure since Saddam Hussein's regime was toppled, fuel and electricity production have not reached the levels maintained before the U.S.-led invasion. Elsewhere in Iraq, about 12 Shia Muslims were killed by insurgents after apparently failing to heed warnings that they should move out of their homes in the mainly Sunni town of Latifia, about 30 kilometers south of Baghdad. The victims were reported to be members of the same extended family. However, there were differing reports of the incident and who was involved. A number of gunmen apparently broke into three homes in Latifia at dawn on Thursday, took 12 males, aged between 20 and 40, and put them into a minivan owned by one of the victims and machine-gunned them. Agence France-Presse said 14 people were killed, some of them women. Reuters, on the other hand, said the killings took place inside a house where intruders slit the throats of 11 men and women. Also yesterday, a suicide bomber killed 4 police officers and wounded 5 at a checkpoint near the Interior Ministry in Baghdad. The attacker was dressed in a police uniform and blew himself up as police cars were entering the ministry. Meanwhile, a web statement attributed the militant group Al-Qaeda in Iraq to holding 5 Sudanese hostages. The group said it had arrested 5 employees of the Sudanese embassy in Baghdad, including diplomats. The report said the Sudanese government had 48 hours to clearly announce that it's breaking off diplomatic relations with the Iraqi government. Otherwise, the government must assume responsibility for sacrificing its diplomats.
Saddam Hussein's attorney is saying that the United States should free Hussein if it wants to end its problems in Iraq and earn the friendship of Arabs. The former Iraqi president's lawyer wrote this in a letter to President Bush. The chief lawyer for Saddam at his trial for crimes against humanity told Bush that Iraqis who supported their former leader were waiting for a bold decision from the world's most powerful statesman to free him. Khalil Dulami wrote in a letter obtained by Reuters, quote, "I call on you, President Bush, to release President Saddam immediately to allow the Iraqis to decide his fate. Only then will you get out of your predicament in Iraq and truly become an advocate of justice. Dulami also said it will become clear to Bush that Saddam's two-month-old trial is a farce of false witnesses and lies that should be ended. Saddam faces hanging if convicted. For many Iraqis, the televised trial since October has generated mixed feelings of anger and revenge and moved others to criticize it as a show trial. Iraq's new leaders say Saddam's trial will erase painful memories of a brutal regime and help usher in a new era of democracy and justice. This, according to Reuters.
General Dan Halutz, Israel's chief of staff, has ruled out the prospect of a preemptive strike against Iran's nuclear installations in the near future. Israeli politicians and military commanders have recently stepped up warnings about Iran, which Israel and the United States accuse of trying to develop a nuclear arsenal. Iran denies the charges, saying its nuclear program is merely designed to meet energy needs. Israeli fears were heightened when Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the Iranian president, called for the Jewish state to be wiped off the map. Meir Dagan, the head of the Mossad, overseas intelligence agency, had told MTs earlier this week that Iran would be able to build an atom bomb within 2 years. Halutz, however, said he did not believe Iran would actually complete manufacturing a bomb before the start of the next decade. Egypt, Syria, and Saudi Arabia said the International Atomic Energy Agency was ignoring Israel's alleged weapons of mass destruction. This, according to a BBC report.
Amidst fresh violence in Sri Lanka, its new president is on a 4-day diplomatic visit in India seeking help in the peace process. Vinod K. Jose reports from New Delhi.
The Indian administration said to the visiting Sri Lankan President Mahinda Rajapakse that it was concerned about rising violence in Sri Lanka and called for the resumption of peace talks between Colombo and the Tamil National Liberation Fighters, LTTE. However, India remained non-committed on President Mahinda Rajapakse's request for its direct role in the peace process. Both sides of the conflict between the Tamil Liberation Force, LTTE, and Sri Lankan government have been observing a ceasefire since 2002. But so far this month, around 40 Sri Lankan soldiers and a couple of Tamil leaders have been killed in fresh violence. In mid-1980s, India intervened militarily in Sri Lanka. The LTTE later killed Indian Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi, who had sent the Indian army to the Tamil areas. Since then, Indian involvement in Sri Lanka has been limited to economic and social affairs. From New Delhi, this is Vinod K. Chol for Free Speech Radio News.
That was the KBOO Morning News for Friday, December 30th, 2005. Portland area weather. Today, rain. Highs around 50s, lows 45. Saturday, occasional rain. Highs around 50, lows around 40. New Year's Day, rain likely and looks like a repeat of Saturday. Thanks for joining us this morning news. This morning's newscast was edited by Becca Bartleson and Chris Andre. Our engineer is Becca Bartleson. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenses, and I'm Jim Thompson.
And I'm Chris Andre.
At 7:30, Ani and Melody host People Rise Up Talk Radio. At 9 on this Friday's Radio Zine, hear a special two-part interview with Jonathan Kozol, educator and activist and author of numerous books including The Shame of the Nation, The Restoration of Apartheid Schooling in America. At 10, it's a special lecture recorded in Portland this spring featuring Michael Kimmel, sociologist and author who has received international recognition for his work on men and masculinity from a pro-feminist perspective. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! Would you like to help with the morning news? KBOO needs volunteers to help getting important stories like these out to listeners. Please contact us at amnews@kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 202. This is KBOO, your community radio station in Portland on 90.7 FM, Corvallis at 100.7, and in the White Salmon area on K220HR at 91.9 FM. Have a lovely weekend.